Saram, dear listeners, and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. So we are continuing our journey through the Sandeha Nivarini, and we are in chapter 8 of this beautiful text where Bhagwan has clarified the doubts in the mind of a spiritual aspirant. Bhagwan himself takes the role of a bhakta, of a seeker, and puts these questions. And again, as the divine master, Bhagwan gives the solutions. We have spent many weeks contemplating on this dialogue between Bhagwan and the bhakta. In the previous two sessions, we were discussing the various segments of chapter 8 of Sandeha Nivarini, and today we'll move on to the third segment of chapter 8. We spent 2-3 weeks in the second segment, segment 8.2. As I've mentioned before, these segments are our own little divisions of this chapter, so that we take small dosages of this divine amrit, so that we can digest them, so that we can internalize them. And today we will listen to segment 8.3, and then we will spend some time trying to understand. Bhagwan is explaining deep Vedantic concepts in this chapter after giving the instructions to be followed in daily life in chapter 7. When the devotee asks Bhagwan deeper questions of spirituality, that's when Bhagwan gives the essence of the Upanishads in a beautiful, easily digestible manner. And the way we can understand Bhagwan's Vahinis is only by reading his discourses. I always feel that just like Lord Krishna gave the Bhagavad Gita, and thousands of years later, for so many centuries, we have been contemplating on what Bhagwan gave us in the form of Bhagavad Gita. Everything is just an elaboration of the Bhagavad Gita. In the same manner, when Bhagwan came down once again as the Satya Sai Avatar, Swami gave his message in the form of Vahinis. And here, he himself wrote down the message. There is no lost of no loss of the message through an intermediary. Directly Bhagwan penned down what he wanted us to understand. And these are the Vahinis, and all the discourses that Bhagwan gave later on. And of course, even as he was writing the Vahinis in the 60s and 70s and 80s are but elaborations and explanations and illustrations of what Bhagwan gave us in the Vahinis. And so, the way we can understand the Vahinis is only by reading more the message that Bhagwan gave in his various discourses, and then just reading will not do. We will have to definitely do some contemplation. We will have to spend some time trying to assimilate. And this same knowledge, when you try to put it into real action, then there will be more doubts. It is one thing to understand intellectually. Recently I met a person from Bengaluru who was telling that now when we listen to Bhagwan's discourses and read his message, read Science Bias, yes, we understand intellectually many things, but when we actually have to practice them, so many practical doubts come. And I think perhaps that is the first step. First, at least understand intellectually, and then slowly see how to put them into action. And once we have those doubts, we go back to the scriptures and read again, go back to the discourses and contemplate again. Pray to Swami. I think that is the most important thing. We cannot get all the learning from the books. Books, Swami, he's saying, if you keep reading books, then your mastaka will become a pustaka, your book, your head will become just another book. Swami says, that will not take us anywhere. But swadhyaya, good reading, is definitely a very, very important spiritual quality for any spiritual aspirant, just to keep the mind in the right direction. And for us, we don't have to go here and there looking for spiritual texts, which book to read and which book not to read, because Swami has given us what we have to read, what is the most appropriate thing for us in this Kali Yuga, in the present circumstances, in the form of vahinis. We don't have to go and distill the scriptures and select which one is appropriate for me. Bhagavan has given us the essence of the scriptures. So it is our fortune to spend time and read the vahinis and read the discourses and try and practice them. And when we have difficulties, pray to him. He will give us the guidance, and the guidance can come in so many ways. The guru is Sarvantaryami. He is not an ordinary guru. He is a guru who is with us all the time, who is constantly watching us, constantly guiding us. And he will definitely show us the way, provided there is Shraddha and Saburi, as Bhagavan says. There is that earnest interest and patience and that quiet determination to follow the path. So let's listen to chapter 8.3 of Sandeha Nivarani, and then we will try to understand what Bhagavan has given us.
Again, another word which is generally used is jada. What is it? How does it operate? Tell me.
From buddhi to body, all transformations of prakriti are jada. This is the asat, the unreal, the achetana, the unconscious. You must take everything that is not sat and chit as jada. In essence, the world is really jada and nothing else. But jada is inseparable from chaitanya, just as air is inseparable from the atmosphere. Why? It has been said in the Gita in the past that all movable and immovable creation is due to the union of prakriti and purusha. Don't you know?
Then, what is the relationship between buddhi and manas on the one hand and atma on the other?
Well, really there is no special relationship between them and the atma. Atma is pure and without blemish. Buddhi too is pure and without blemish. And just as the sun is reflected in a mirror, the splendor of the atma is reflected in the buddhi. Then the shining chaitanya of the buddhi is reflected in the manas. The shining of the manas falls upon the senses, and the light from the senses falls upon the body. Now, what is the connection between all these? The relationship of all this is the splendor of the atma, is it not? The activity of every other thing is caused by the fact that there is a buddhi which can reflect that splendor, is it not? So, note how the buddhi is related, this side with the atma and that side with the manas and the indriyas or the senses.
Then, what is the relation between the jiva, which says I, and the senses and the body?
There is no relation at all. The I is separate from the body, the mind and the senses. The I simply superimposes on the jiva, that is in fact the body, consciousness, the behavior of the inner faculties of the mind and the senses. I am fair, says the jiva, superimposing upon itself something with which it has no connection. I am dumb, it says, making the same mistake about the senses. It says it has this desire and that and imposes on itself the activities of the mind and its faculties. All this is mere superimposition. The basic truth is only one. The Paramatma, the Param Jyoti, the Eternal, the True is only one. Understand this well.
Ah, what superb teaching, Swami! If only this teaching of the principle of the Atma, which even children can grasp, spreads over the whole world, the world will emerge from darkness to light.
That is the reason why I converse with you about every point and allow all to partake in it. The sun's light falls upon the mirror. The light from the mirror falls upon the bungalow. The light upon the bungalow falls upon the eye. Similarly, this Sandeha Nivarini has been decided upon in order that the illumination of my teaching may fall upon the Bhakta mirror and thence on to the Sanatana Sarathi bungalow, in order that from there its effulgence may shed light on the peace and harmony of the world.
This is so beautifully Bhagwan is telling that this Sandeha Nivarani has been decided upon so that the illumination of my teaching, the light of my teaching will fall on the Bhakta. Just like the sun's light falls upon the mirror and the light from the mirror then falls upon the building and the light from the building falls on the eye and that is how you see the building. Bhagwan is telling this Sandeha Nivarani, from the Bhakta's mind will then go on to the building. The Sanatana Sarathi, Swami is referring to the monthly magazine, because in those days, as we all know, Bhagwan used to write these articles for the monthly magazine, Sanatana Sarathi, so that my teachings get reflected in the Sanatana Sarathi and from there, the effulgence may shed light on the peace and harmony of the world, Bhagwan says. And that is what is happening. The light from the Sanatana Sarathi has been giving illumination to so many seekers for so many years now. And what we are doing now is also this same thing, partaking this light, partaking this beautiful wisdom that Bhagwan has written and gifted us. So, in this segment, Bhagwan begins by explaining what is Jada. So, the Bhakta questions Swami, what is Jada? And Swami says, from Buddhi to body, all the transformations of the Prakriti, all the transformations in nature, everything is Jada. If you read scriptural text, if you read Vedantic text, you will come across these terms, Jada and Chaitanya. So Swami is explaining what is Jada. Swami is telling all these changes in the nature, everything is Jada. Everything is Asat, unreal. Everything is Achetana, unconscious. You must take everything that is not Sat and Chit as Jada, Swami says. You describe the divine as Sat, Chit and Ananda. And Bhagwan is saying, Jada is everything that is not Sat, that is not truth. And that is not consciousness, not Chit. Everything that is not truth, not consciousness, that is Jada. So Bhagwan is saying, basically the whole world is really Jada. It is nothing else. But this Jada is inseparable from Chaitanya. Chaitanya is consciousness. Just as air is inseparable from the atmosphere, Bhagwan says. You cannot separate. Though Jada is the unreal, you cannot separate it from the real. though jada is the unconscious, you cannot separate it from the consciousness. And then Bhagwan says, this is what is mentioned in the Gita. This is what Krishna says in the Gita. Everything that is movable and immovable in the creation is because of the Prakriti, because of the divine and the nature, because of the supreme principle and the manifestation of the supreme principle as Prakriti, as creation. In fact, Bhagwan explains this concept of Jada and Chaitanya in a very beautiful summer course discourse in 1972. And Bhagwan refers to the Bhagavad Gita there. Swami says, several passages in the Bhagavad Gita refer to the eternal existence of the soul. Lord Krishna says, there was never a time when you were not there. Lord Krishna is telling Arjuna, there was never a time when you were not there. All the others, Bhima, Drona and all the others, they also have been there. The world was also there. I, who am the Ishvara, you, who are the Jiva, and this world, which is the Jagat, all the three have always been existing. The Jiva, Ishvara, and the world have been in existence at all times. They were there even before the creation, and they will continue to be there. And as Krishna is telling all this, Arjuna is absolutely confused. Understandably. And then Krishna says, the physical bodies may be undergoing transformation, but the Atma Tattva, the Atmic principle, is eternal. It is changeless. It is always there. It was always there. It will always be there. You were there. You will always be there. I was there. I will always be there. The creation was there. Creation will always be there. Now what does this mean? On one hand, we are saying the creation is all the time changing, everything is changing, but now here Krishna is telling, no, everything has always been there. And Bhagwan explains that through the three approaches or the three schools of philosophy which have been propounded to enable us this Atma Tattva, this principle of the Atma. And Swami says in the summer course discourse, these three approaches are the three schools of Indian spiritual philosophy, Vedantic philosophy, Dvaita, Advaita, Visishta Dvaita, or rather, Dvaita, Visishta Dvaita, and Advaita, if we have to put it in the order of the level of the spiritual discourse that these three ways of thinking enable us to grasp the immensity of the Indian literature, Indian scriptural philosophies. So Swami says, first let us try to understand Dvaita, duality. So what does Dvaita say? Dvaita propounds that Jiva and Prakriti always exist. They are always there and they will never be one. The nature and the individual, they are all different. And they will always be different. So according to this philosophy, there is permanence of these two entities, Swami says. The nature and the individual, both are permanent and they are different. And when you accept this difference, that is what is Dvaita, the dualistic philosophy. What is Visishta Dvaita? Swami says, Visishta Dvaita postulates Chit and Achit in the phenomenal world and accepts the phenomena of appearance and illusion. The concept of appearance or illusion something which appears as something which is, though it is in reality not that. In fact, in the previous session also we talked about it when Bhagwan used the word adhyasa, how we imagine one thing to be there when the reality is something else. And Bhagwan gave the example of the rope and the snake. So Swami is saying in Vishishta Advaita, we accept that there is a phenomena of illusion, of appearance. But Vishishta Advaita says both are true and both are valid. So Vishishta Advaita establishes the oneness of Jagat, which is Jada or inert, and of Jiva, which is full of consciousness. So Vishishta Advaita says, yes, there is Jagat, there is this world which is Jada, which is constantly changing, and which is Jiva, which is consciousness. Both are valid, both are true. There is inertness and consciousness, Jada and Chaitanya. Both are the manifestations of the same principle of divinity, and both are valid. That is what Vishishta Advaita says. While Dvaita says that both are different, both exist and both are different, Vishishta Advaita says that both are valid, but they are connected. They are manifestations of the same principle of divinity, but both are valid. Both exist. Because these two entities cannot merge with each other, they have been postulated as different aspects of the same form or as part and parcel of the same principle. That is what Vishishta Advaita says. There is this consciousness and there is this Jada, the world. Both are valid. Both exist. But yes, they are, the source is the same. Jagat, the world, Jiva, the consciousness, and Purusha, the supreme, they are not three separate entities, but they are one and the same. Swami says from the ultimate point of view. So Swami says the greatness of Vishishta Advaita is that it understands this and it proclaims their unity. Vishishta Advaita says appearances are different. There may be varieties of experiences, but there is a unifying spirit. That is what Vishishta Advaita says. The world, the individual and nature, yes, they are different. The experiences that you have as different, the experience is valid, but there is an unifying spirit. That acceptance is there in Vishishta Advaita, and this acceptance is not there in Dvaita, which is the principle of duality. Bhagavan gives the example of gold and says, though there are many ornaments of different shapes, the gold is the same. If God has not these subtle and gross bodies, the very nature of God will be incomplete. So, what Vishishta Advaita says is gold is the same, but the gold has so many shapes and so many sizes and so many ways of shaping the gold. And that is part of the world. That is how world is. And you cannot have it in any different way. So very nature of God, similarly, is to have all these subtle and gross bodies and different manifestations. That is what Vishishta Advaita postulates. Bhagavan gives another example. Swami says, you take the kingdom and the people. Without the king, there cannot be kingdom. Without the people, there cannot be any kingdom. So you cannot have the kingdom without the king or the people. They are all interdependent. So Vishishta Advaita recognizes this inextricable interconnectedness. Swami says, when we take into consideration the nature of the king and the people, then we will be able to grasp that there is also the principle of non-duality or Advaita here. Swami says, how in this Visishta Advaita there is Advaita. The king is also one among the people and he is also a man. The king is the lawgiver and the people are those who are regulated and bound by the law. Though the ruler and the ruled may appear to be separate, but as human beings they are one and the same. And that is where Advaita comes. Advaita looks at only the unifying principle, looks at the unity. Visishta Advaita recognizes the seeming diversity, though it knows the unifying principle. But Advaita sees only the unity. Bhagwan says, just as we are told about the oneness of Jada and Chaitanya, we find Chaitanya or consciousness in inertness. We find Chaitanya in Jada. We find the features of inertness in consciousness as well. And that is the reason why they are inseparable. You find Jada in Chaitanya and Chaitanya in Jada. You find inertness in consciousness. And you also find consciousness in inertness. Inertness cannot exist without consciousness, and consciousness also cannot exist without inertness, Bhagwan says. And this is what Bhagwan says in this segment 8.3. In essence, the world is really Jada and nothing else. But Jada is inseparable from Chaitanya, just as air is inseparable from the atmosphere. In the summer course, Discourse 1972, Bhagwan goes on to explain, we may mistake and think that the conscious force cannot enter into the inert matter and vice versa. That is a mistaken idea. And Bhagwan explains how there is consciousness even in inertness, even in inert matter. The whole world we know is permeated by shabda or sound. But where there is movement or motion, there is sound, Swami says. When we close our eyes, we generate sound. When our eyelids move, they do make a little noise, but the noise is so inaudible that we are unaware of it. But just because it is inaudible to us, we cannot deny the presence of sound. Just as we are not able to recognize the sound that is inaudible, in the same way we are not able to recognize the consciousness in inertness. We are not able to recognize that element of inertness in consciousness also. Bhagwan says, this is the illusion. There are two kinds of illusion, Bhagwan says. One is parinama, which is evolution, where one thing actually changes into another. And the second is vivarta. Vivarta is a property that makes us think that there is a change though the substance remains the same. It is made to appear to have a different form and shape. And Swami gives again the example of the rope and the snakes. When you are walking alone, you may come across a rope, but you get deluded to imagine that it is a snake. The rope does not go and the snake does not come. It is all an illusion. Vivarta is that quality that makes us forget the real thing and makes us impose upon that some other thing which is not there. And this is because of Maya. This is because of illusion. Swami says, today we live under this influence of Vivarta. Most of the time, all the time, we are in this illusion. Though we are Atma Swarupa, though we are the Supreme Reality, we are all the time covered with this illusion of body consciousness, of body illusion, Deha Bhranti, as Swami says. We mistake our ephemeral existence to be the real existence. This changing existence, we think this is real. We are not afraid of the rope, but we are terribly afraid of the snake, isn't it? We are not afraid of the Atma, but we are very afraid of life. Though we are Atma Swarupas, and though we should be absolutely be free from fear, unfortunately, it's because of this illusion that we are in fear, we are lost in fear. And Bhagwan explains how that reality is there in each one of us. Swami says there is only one sun that is shining in the sky. But this same sun, we find it in 1,000 pots filled with water. The same sun is reflected in these 1,000 pots. Because the 1,000 pots are there and they are filled with water, the water which has the quality of reflection, the sun seems to be split up into 1,000 suns, isn't it? But is that really true? Has the sun really split up into so many suns? That is only a feeling. It is not true. It's an illusion, isn't it? What is the truth? That there's only one sun shining in the sky. Swami says, this is to recognize that everything is just that one sun and nothing else. That is Advaita. To recognize these reflections and say this reflection also is valid. Yes, we know that it is all connected, but these reflections also have their own existence, and we accept the existence and the seeming reality of the reflection. That is Visishta Advaita. And Dvaita, duality, is to say that no, both are different and they cannot be the same. Swami says, our bodies may be compared to the pot that is filled with water, and that same Atma is reflected in each pot, and it appears to be separate, just like every reflection appears to be separate. Bhagwan says, many people ask this question, Swami, please tell us where the Atma goes after the death of the body. We talk about Atma. Atma leaves the body when someone dies. Swami says, what happens when the pot breaks? What happens when the water spills on the ground? Where does the sun, which was till now there in the pot, as the reflection, where did the sun go? It seems like such a foolish question, isn't it? What do you mean, where did the sun go? It was just a reflection. The sun has not come and the sun is not going to go anywhere. What was there was only a reflection. The reflection was there because there was water in the pot. But if the pot is broken and the water is gone out, run out, then there is no reflection. So, the water, the pot, everything is just jada. Bhagwan is telling, everything is just the seeming reflection. It is this body consciousness. Bhagwan says, there's another question people ask. If the same sun is reflected in all the pots, would not all the reflections have the same value? Swami says, yes. All the reflections will have the same value provided that pots are also of the same value. If the pots are of different value, obviously the reflections will have different value, because one pot may be an earthen pot. Another pot could be a copper pot. Another could be made of brass. Another could be made of silver or gold. So the value of the pot varies according to every person's position, education, wealth, and so on. But the inherent reflection is the same. The Atma Swarupa is the same. And Swami says that is the reason why the differences are so illusory. They all are related to the body. They all are related to the pots. It has got nothing to do with the sun. The Atma Tattva is like the sun, which is one and it is indivisible. Can you really divide the reflections? It is indivisible. You take a smaller pot, you will find a smaller sun. You take a bigger pot, you will find a bigger sun reflected there. Bhagavan says there was once on the bank of a river a group of children. They were tending to their cows. It was monsoon time and all of a sudden there was a furious current of water. And because it was a fast current of water, one bear had slipped into the river and this bear was being drawn into the midstream and was being carried away. And one of the boys on the banks of the river saw this floating mass from a distance, and to that boy it appeared to be like a bundle of blankets floating in the water. And so this boy thought, let me jump into this water and get this bundle of blankets out. It will be useful for me. And so he just jumped into the water. He swam across the river and he caught hold of the bundle of blankets. The boy embraced with his hands, unknowingly, the bear that he thought was only a bundle of blankets. And when the boy embraced the bear was just swimming away, being taken by the force of the water. So the bear also held on to this boy. The bear also embraced with his own hands. Now, how much ever the boy tried to extricate himself, the bear did not leave him. The bear held him fast. And now there were boys on the shore and they were shouting, "Hey, leave that bundle away. Why are you holding on to that bundle, man? Come fast." And the boy in the water, it is struggling to escape. And the boy is crying out, "I want to escape, but it is not allowing me to escape. I don't know, it has caught me." Swami says, that is what happens in our life, in the river of our life. This is what illusion does. This is what Maya does. It makes us believe something which is not the truth. The Maya plays like the bear and we mistake it to be a bundle of blankets, Swami says. We think that this bundle of blankets will give us solace, it will give us comfort, it will give us happiness. If I have these blankets, you know, I can sleep cozily in the winter. I can use these blankets to make so many things and be very comfortable. And I jump into the river and I think I will get all this out and I will make most of this free blankets that I'm getting. But what happens? You get caught there. How much ever you want to extricate yourself from it, just like the boy wanted to extricate itself from the bear now, it was so impossible for him to do it. And Swami says, this is the illusion that is created by the Maya. So Bhagavan explains in Visishtadvaita, from time immemorial, it is explained that these forms are different, but there is only one principle, there is only one unity. There is only multiplicity of the forms. But in Advaita, we have to understand it is absolutely just one, not two, but one. There is no scope for existence of two. which is that which is not two? Swami says, Brahmam alone. That is what is not two. And in the Gita, Lord Krishna taught this principle to Arjuna at several places. For example, at one place, Lord Krishna says, Vrishninam Vasudevosmi Pandavanam Dhananjaya. Among the Vrishnis, I am Vasudeva, because I am the son of Vasudeva. Because I am the son of Vasudeva, I am Vasudeva. Among the Pandavas, I am Arjuna. So Bhagavan gives this example and says, though he is one, but he represents himself as two. Bhagavan says, the Lord in the Gita further says, I am Ishvara, you are the Jiva, and the heroes who are ranged against you constitute the world, the Jagat. This Jagat is all reflected as in a mirror. You are considering that you are separate and all these people are separate from you. You are thinking that you are different and they are different. Ishvara, Jiva and Prakriti, all these three entities, they have been there from time immemorial. Immemorial, just like the sun was there, the reflection was there, the pot, they are all there. Just because they are there, that does not mean they are different. And now Arjuna asks, okay Lord, if these entities, these Jiva, Ishvara and Prakriti that you are saying have always been there, they have been in existence, and if Jiva and Ishvara, both these entities are one, why is it that I do not know anything about it? You know everything about it. When you and I are one, how is it that you know and I do not know? Why I don't get the secret? And that's where Krishna says, Arjuna, you can also know. The only difference is you do not focus your mind upon the goal. Because your focus is not there, you don't know. But my mind is always steadily riveted on that reality. I'm always only in that reality. Therefore, I know it. That is the only difference. And Swami says, but Arjuna could not grasp this. He says, no, Krishna, you are trying to hoodwink me, Krishna. What is this? I am not able to understand this. And that's when Krishna says, Arjuna, I am Satya Swarupa. Whatever I say is only absolute truth. It is because of the effect of Maya that you have become subjected to illusion and you are thinking that what I am saying is not completely true because you are not able to understand. And then Krishna says, okay Arjuna, tell me, how old are you? And Arjuna says, I am 80 years old. Krishna says, okay, tell me 3 years ago on such and such a date, where were you? So Arjuna could not recollect. Lord, I don't remember where I was on that day 3 years ago. So Krishna says, then you don't remember where you were, but you accepted that you were there somewhere 3 years ago. Because if you were not there, then how are you here today? You admit that you do not know where you were 3 years ago. Then Krishna says, okay, let me ask you another question. Tell me, how old were you when King Drupada was bound and brought to you, to your kingdom? And Arjuna said, I was 16 years old when that incident happened. Krishna then asks, okay, do you remember when you got married to Subhadra? And Arjuna says, yes, yes, I certainly remember. I was married in my 22nd year. Krishna says, see, an event such as the marriage which took place 50 years ago, or the incident of bringing King Drupada, which happened many, many years ago, you remember them, but you don't remember what happened on this day 3 years ago. Why is it? Krishna says, The nature of Maya is that it makes you attach importance to some events such as birthdays, wedding days and victory days and all that, and not to others. You attach importance to something and you don't give that much of significance or value to something else. You make this distinction, and this happens because of the Maya. But for me, for the divine, everything is significant. Everything is the same. Swami gives the example of Rama, where for Rama, whether it was joy or sorrow, it was same. Rama was not elated by joy. He was not downcast by sorrow. Swami says, not only Rama, all avatars have demonstrated this state of samadhi. Rama, who got ready for the coronation ceremony at 7 o'clock at the same time, in the same stride, when he was asked to go to the forest, he just did that. He was not elated at the prospect of being the future king, nor did he get depressed or frustrated when he was asked to go to the forest. Krishna always used to be smiling, whether it was the Rudra Bhumi, the sacrificial field, or whether it was the Yuddha Bhumi, the battlefield. He was always the embodiment of Ananda. And that is the reason why even on the battlefield, he taught Gita. Gita means the song he was singing in the battlefield. When Krishna could sing even in the midst of a battle, it means he is always happy. He is always cheerful. And that is the real nature of the avatars. They are all the time overflowing with the spirit of delight and joy. Just as the ocean rises and surges up when there is a full moon in the sky, in the same way, Bhagwan says, the heart of the avatar overflows with limitless, boundless love all the time. There can be no change in the attitude, in the affection and in the thoughts of God. It is the ignorant who attribute changes to the divine. And that happens because of their illusion, because of their petty-mindedness. When the divine fulfills some of their desires, then they praise God. Or when some desires do not get fulfilled, then they condemn God. Oh God, you have no mercy, you are subjecting me to this punishment. But God is unaffected by all this. So Swami says, because you attach importance to some days, that's why that remains in your memory. And because you do not attach importance to something, you make this distinction between something important and something not important because of the Maya. That is the difference between the Jiva and the Divine. For the Jiva, individual, something is necessary, something is unnecessary. There is a difference. But for the Divine, there is nothing that is necessary or nothing that is unnecessary. He is just a spectator of all. For a spectator, the past, the present and the future, everything is the same. He visualizes all the three periods of time. He is there in all the three periods of time. Swami says, though God is one, we establish different kinds of relationship with God. Some might think of the divine as a father, as mother, Shiva, Hari, Mata. Again, this difference is also only out of illusion, because there is only one God behind all these relationships. Just like milk takes various forms, ghee, butter, buttermilk. Ultimately, everything is derived from milk. Swami says, milk is Advaita, butter is Visishta Advaita, buttermilk is Dvaita, but both Dvaita and Visishta Advaita, duality and qualified non-duality, they are all derived from milk, from Advaita. That is the reason why it is said, Advaita Darshanam Jnanam. Wisdom is to have this vision of non-duality. That is what is said, Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma. Brahman is that which is truth, which is endless, which is changeless, which is all-knowing. Brahman is derived from the word, root word Bruhi. Bruhi means that which does not change. That is called Brahma Tattva. That is the principle of Atma, Brahma Tattva, or the Brahma Tattva. It does not change. It's eternal. Swami says, this entire world of the universe is born out of this Rasa or God who is called as Rasa Swarupa. And that which is born out of Rasa cannot be nirasa, cannot be devoid of rasa. That which is born out of the consciousness cannot be devoid of consciousness. So inertness which has come out of consciousness is filled with consciousness, though we may not be able to see it because of the maya, because of the illusion. And that's what Swami says in this 8.3 segment. Swami says you cannot separate the jada and the chaitanya. You cannot separate the air from the atmosphere. Everything that is movable and immovable in the universe is because the union of Prakriti and Purusha. And what is there is only Chaitanya. In fact, Bhagavan goes on to explain in Jnana Vahini that the Chandogya Upanishad declares the divine as the limitless, the eternal, the Brahman. Another word that is used by the spiritually wise to describe this experience of Brahman is the one whose nature is splendor, glory or effulgence, which is illumination itself, Jyoti Swarupa. Even 10 million suns cannot equal the splendor of the Supreme Self. Swami says, Shanti Swarupa indicates that which is peace itself. Supreme Self is Supreme Peace. That is what is Prashanti. And the opposite of this pure consciousness is Jada, is the inertness. Swami says, Brahman is eternally conscious, Nitya Chaitanya. And this Atma has no parts. That's why it is Nishkala. It is without blemish. That's why it is Nirmala. It is unaffected by desire, anger, greed, pride, envy. It is without activity. That's why it is Nishkriya. It is only the creation, Prakriti, which undergoes all the modifications, or at least gives the impression that it is modified. But the Supreme Spirit is the eternal witness. It is ever modificationless. Only that which persists in the past, present and the future, which has no beginning or end, which neither changes nor moves, which has the uniform form, a unified experience-giving property, that alone is Brahman. It is that principle. That alone is Chaitanya. Absolute truth is beyond the reach of time and space. It is indivisible, Swami says. It is aparichinna. It has no beginning. It is ever existence. It is self-revealing. It is experiential wisdom. It is jnana. Swami says, it cannot be marked out as such and such and explained by some characteristics. It is anirdeshya. You cannot explain it. Swami says, when something that is above and beyond the intellect and the mind, how can that is beyond the mind be described through the mind? How can you describe it through your senses? That's why it is invisible to the eye. It is adrishya. The eye is very limited in its capacity. The eye functions because of this energy. How can it know that energy? Through Brahman, the eye is able to see. How can the eye perceive the Brahman itself? Bhagavan says, the mind is bound by the limitations of time, space and causation. How can the Supreme Self, who is superior to these and unaffected by these, be limited by them? So all these beautiful words to describe the Brahman, Nirmala, Vimala, all this is applied to the Supreme Self. And they have these beautiful meanings. Achintya, incapable of being conceived. Avyavaharya, without any activity. You cannot impose any activity on this supreme principle. It is unique and unaware of any move towards or away from another. Swami says, know that the creation is the swarupa of, is the form of this Virata Purusha. Brahman is that which has become or appears to have become all this. And that's why he is called Antaryami, the inner motive force. And the attachment to the Atma won't undergo any modification, Swami says. Even when the senses and the body fall, the Atma remains and it is full of bliss. It is unlimited, it is indestructible. It is the nature of the highest bliss, Paramananda. It is the reason why it is called Sachidananda. Swami says all these qualities, what are the qualities of the Atma? Swami gives the example of fire. You have redness, heat and splendor. That is the nature of fire. Swami says these are not the qualities, it's just the nature of fire. Similarly, Swami says Atma has the nature as Sat Chit Ananda. Atma is truth. Atma is consciousness. Atma is bliss. That is its very nature. Just like liquidity, coldness and taste are the very nature of water. Swami says, some people might ask, how can Atma be all-knowing? Swami says, Atma is consciousness and all else is inert, jada. Atma alone can know because nothing else is capable of knowing. And Atma knows that all else is Atma. Atma alone knows that all else is Atma. Can the pot ever know the ether which is inside it, the air inside it? Can the pot ever know the akasha inside it? Although it does not know, the ether is always there. Swami says, the pot does not know, but the ether is always there. But the Atma in people similarly knows the inert in the presence of the senses. The Atma knows. Bhagavan says, the only knower is the Atma. That is the only thing that exists. The body, the mind, the senses, Swami says, all these, they move and change. They have a beginning and an end. That is why they are jada. They have all these qualities of sattva, raja, tama, all these gunas. They cause the delusion of reality. They have no absolute value. They shine only out of borrowed light, Swami says. All these senses and the mind, they shine out of borrowed light. They are not, the moon is not self-luminous. The moon reflects the light from the sun. If you think that the moon is giving light, then that is an illusion. That is the condition of the body, the mind and the senses, Swami says. The multiplicity of the body is non-existence. They appear so because they are formed by the tendencies of the mind. They simply appear on the screen as different and varied. Just like in the dream, though one experiences a multiplicity, but one knows that they are unreal. They are unreal creations of one's own mind. That is clear to the witness of the dream. So that is the night dream. But Swami says, even during the waking stage, what you are going through is a daydream. The experience of the waking stage is also a mental picture. Swami gives all these examples to understand that there is only consciousness all around. Everything around is jada. The only thing that is there is consciousness, and it is the consciousness which permeates in the prakriti, in the jada. And so beautifully Bhagwan gave that example of the sun, the reflection in the pots, just for us to grasp this concept. And so beautifully Bhagwan explained also the difference between Visishta Dvaita, Dvaita and Advaita. Just for us, see, even if we intellectually understand this, it will help us some time in life to contemplate on this, and then we will know what is true and what is not true. Bhagwan, in a birthday discourse, Swami says that smara nitya anityatam, constantly be aware of what is changing and what is permanent. I think that understanding will help us to lead our life in a manner where we are not too shaken with the vicissitudes of life. We lead our normal life. Bhajasadhu samagamam, kuru punya ahoratnam, ahoratram, tyajadurjana samsargam, you be in the good company, go away from the bad company. Do meritorious deeds, but do everything, Swami says, with the complete idea of what is true and what is not true, what is permanent and what is not. I think doing everything in that consciousness, with that spirit, will help us to lead a life where our focus is right and we will not be so perturbed with the tempests of our life. The Bhakta still questions Swami, so what is the relationship between the Buddhi, the mind on one hand, and the Atma on the other? So Bhagwan here goes on to explain this through another very beautiful analogy and explanation. I will come to that in the coming session of Vahini Satsang. And that will help us to get a little more clearer picture. And these are concepts which I am sharing whatever little I have understood, and I seek your pardon if my understanding is far from anything that a master in the philosophy probably would give or help you to grasp. Whatever I have gathered little bit is from Bhagwan's discourses, and I share it with all humility because I am also in the path and I am trying to learn and grasp these concepts in my own little way, and I am sharing whatever little I have understood and grasped. So please, if you have a better understanding of this, please feel free to share, and I'll be only happy to share that learning with everyone. And let us help each other and walk through this path, so that as we go through life, spirituality becomes the basis. Once the concept of spirituality becomes the basis for everything, then no matter what we do, no matter we go out and make our living or we go out and achieve different things in the world, once the fundamentals are clear, then we will do very best in the things outside, and we will be able to do that from a very, very steady and stronger, deeper insight. And that is what will help us to go through life in a very, very smooth way. And we pray to Bhagwan that we have this understanding and realization, so that through His grace, we are all the time in that state of ananda, no matter what happens to us in our lives. So dear listeners, we'll continue this, and we pray to Bhagwan that He guides us in this path. Thank you so much for being with me through this journey. There is much more in this segment 8.3 of Sandhya Nivarani, and let's pray to Bhagwan that He guides us through the understanding of the rest of the Chapter 8 of Sandhya Nivarani. Thank you so much. Sairam.